Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, 95.1 FM, Freeview 277, and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello, Paul Andrews.
Hello.
That was a rum do, wasn't it, on Thursday? At the
Abba-ba-ba-ba-buzz. At the Abba-ba-ba-buzz, yes.
It was a rum-do.
It was good fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, rum-do means good, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. No, yeah. It means odd, doesn't it?
What does a rum do? Because it's like...
What does a rum do?
Well, it
makes you drunk if you drink too much.
Well, there's always a perk to everything. But I thought a rum-do...
Makes you go ho-ho-ho and a bottle of rum.
No, are you being Santa Claus or are you being a pirate?
No, I'm being a pirate, aren't I?
Well, it sounded more Santa to me. Yeah. I mean, ho, 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 sorry.
And a bottle of rum. It's a famous song. Come on, what's the matter with you?
No, that's probably a rabbi.
Exactly, yeah, so...
Anyway, rum do.
It was good fun.
It was good. And you kept to times, which was great.
Of course I did. I'm a professional.
I noticed a few people trying to make speeches and you said, anyway, off you get.
Get off, yeah. Get off.
And I thought the food was very good.
It's excellent.
Except I was gluten-free, I asked for, because they said any special requests.
I bet you ate the chocolate pie, though, didn't you?
No,
of course you did.
I had my own gluten-free one.
Oh, did you?
And then Adam Reddy, you know, of Inside Kent.
Mm.
Is he the editor? I never know. He's the editor, isn't he, Adam Reddy, Inside Kent magazine?
Yeah,
well, I sat next to him, and he only ate half of his...
so you ate the other half?
Chocolate... What was it? A chocolate fondant?
Yeah, you ate the other half, didn't you?
Well, he offered it to me.
Yeah, I bet you ate it, didn't you?
Rude not to, I thought.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't puff up, so it's fine. Couldn't have been much flour in it. Let me tell you. So because I said I was gluten-free, I was furious because the starter, as you know, was a prawn cocktail, which is one of my one weaknesses.
One of your many.
Yeah, one of my one weaknesses, and... as you know, prawns are not gluten, but they lumped me in with vegetarians, and they often do that, you know, these dudes. They think, gluten-free, okay, she's vegetarian, but no, I'm not. I'm a meat eater.
Yeah.
So I managed to snaffle a prawn cocktail. They said prawn cocktail.
Well, you just stole it off a table, did you?
Well, I had my starter, which was very nice. It was a melon with some a jus of berries.
So you had two starters
and
two desserts.
Somebody didn't come, so
had two starters and two desserts.
Yeah, the boys offered me the prawn cocktail. They said, do you want the prawn cocktail, Jules? I said, yes, please.
Cool. So we were, as Jules said, we were at the Above and Beyond Bromley Business Awards. Organised by the wonderful Loretta Wright of Life In Magazines. She did a fantastic job. It was her first awards dinner. She was absolutely marvellous. It was a marvellous job she did. I was compere for the evening, which was really good fun. And we had 12 award winners, which was lovely.
It was really good. And it was.
And then we had an ABBA tribute band.
They were great. I swirled you around on the dance floor and then you escaped.
You did attack me on the dance floor as I tried to go home,
And then you escaped.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I think awards are very difficult sometimes when they go on. I thought the timing of this was really, really good.
I've got another one next week.
Is that going to go on or are you going to get that?
Yeah, no, it'll go on forever.
And where's that?
It's a biggie. It's a real biggie. It's the Kent Awards and it's at the Kent Event Centre at the Agriculture
Ground. I love a biggie.
Yeah.
I love a biggie.
Next Thursday or Wednesday.
So we don't talk about politics on the show, but we have to mention that Suella Braverman has gone and Cameron has come in.
Why do we have to mention that?
Well, we do, because it's the news. And later on, we have our very own tax expert, Mark Telford.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be asking...
Is he going to give an... Is he's turned to have a ministerial job, is it?
You might get a knighthood, you never know.
Thank you. Now, come on, everyone's got to have a go now. Yeah, they're running out of people.
I mean...
They're going through the back catalogue now.
I'm not going to vote Conservative.
Churchill's up next. Winston's up next. They're going to dig him up and make him First Lord of the Admiralty.
It wouldn't be a bad thing, would it? I mean, I've always liked a cigar. And also driving in today, the rain, because you know that my Merc was in the garage.
Yeah.
It's
got a soft top as well,
has
it?
It's got a soft top.
Does it leak?
It's a sports car. No, because I had it all done, didn't I?
Yeah, right.
As you told me, soft top in England. I had it all done. But the new husband, in his wisdom, stripped the car of, you know, personal effects, my lipstick and things. To go into the garage. It's come back, but he doesn't put them back in and he hides it all so I can never find it. So no umbrella in torrential rain. So luckily I had my sou'wester on.
I sat in the car park out here for over 20 minutes.
Crying?
No, I just, there was no way I could get out of the car because the rain was too heavy.
Well, not with your shoes.
And I waited for a lull in the rain.
Yeah.
Jumped out of the car, locked the car, ran in towards the building, and just as I got halfway up the driveway there, it fell down again. I got absolutely soaked.
Well, you live in Tenterden, which is the country.
Yeah.
So why don't you just, you know, Prince Charles said there's no such thing as bad weather.
Yeah.
Only the wrong clothes.
Yeah.
So where's your boots and your sou'wester and your Wellingtons?
You want me to come in here in Wellingtons and a barber jacket and a deerstalker hat?
Yeah, I quite like a fisherman in waders.
Yeah.
I could go for that look.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or a fireman, even better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With a, you know, those tie-waders.
Anyway, I want
to... Or a farmer in breeches. Now, that's a good look. Remember Farmer Charles Tassel?
Yeah,
always used
yeah.
to make him wear his breeches on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
I want to rant.
Oh, no. Go on, then.
My phone.
My phone?
My phone.
You've gone all French.
My phone.
Yeah. Your landline?
My landline. Right, I don't have a landline. I've got a digital voice. I was one of the very first people to be swapped to digital voice back in 2018.
They experimented on you.
It's a fiasco. It doesn't work.
No.
I've been without a phone for 5.5 days now.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
And especially at your age, because you're, you know...
Well, I don't use my landline, but the only reason I know that it wasn't working is I went to see my poor old mum, and the carer went, "I've been trying to get hold of you for 2 days. Why does nobody answer your phone?" I don't know.
Doesn't she have the mobile?
Oh, don't get me started. When do you expect anybody to be sensible?
I know.
Anyway, my phone didn't work. And I eventually got BT to pay attention to the fact that it didn't work. And it turned out that for some reason or another, my hub had lost its settings.
Oh.
Don't know why.
And you're quite techie, so you could have sorted
But they told me when I wasn't in. Mm. Yeah.
When you say hub, do you mean router?
Yeah, my router. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or if you're listening in America, router.
So they said, "Oh, it's lost its settings. That's why your phone doesn't work." Oh, great. They said, "Oh, we'll redo it for you." I said, "Well, I'm not there at the moment." And they said, "No, that's fine. We can do it remotely."
Ooh, dear.
Which they did. They reset it to the factory default, which meant nothing worked anymore
when
I got home. And we were talking earlier about passwords, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So when I got home, I had to redo it. I've got a mesh system as well. None of the mesh was working. I had to redo all the mesh and everything. And it wasn't working, and I'm screaming and shouting at it and kicking it and all kinds of stuff and throwing bits and pieces about trying to get it to work. And I arrived at this point where I got it all back, and I changed the name of the Wi-Fi and the password from what the default setting was, but of course it defaulted back to what BT wanted it to be, and I didn't want it to be that. So I thought, right, I'm now going to change my password back. Well, I log into the router and it says enter your admin password, which is the default one. So I put it in and it let me in. Mm. And then I said, right, I want to set up a new one. And they went, put in your password. So I put it in. They went, no, that's wrong. No, it's not. I literally just used it and you let me in.
It's very annoying.
Yeah. And that's bonkers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I complained to BT and they went, yeah, it does that sometimes.
Mm.
While they were thinking about it, I actually went back in and I just went, change my password. And it let me change a password, even though it said I didn't know my password.
It is.
I mean,
talk about
lack of security. It's unbelievable.
It's really. Well, you know, I get BT men going up the pole.
I've heard about that.
At the end of my garden.
Yeah.
They just appear.
Yeah.
And I'm in my hammock.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit worried they're going to put a 5G there. I don't know whether they will. But we were having a rant on Twitter, weren't we?
Mm.
Ex-Twitter.
Yeah.
About the very thing.
Yeah.
And BT said, oh, we've got something in place. It was some old-fashioned, like, go out and buy two tin cans and a wire.
This is how ridiculous we've got to in this country. This is just bonkers, where the technology that they're trying to put in is twice as bad as the technology they're trying to replace, which is
like
just
stupid. Out of the 1950s.
What they said was, one of the things that I complained about is my mum's 95, she's got dementia, And if you get a power cut or your broadband goes down, you can't make an emergency phone call. They have a duty of care to be able to make it. So their backup for that is to send you a battery.
Oh, my goodness.
A lead acid battery that you put in there so that my 95-year-old mum with dementia can unplug her router, plug in a battery,
crazy.
Fire it up again. Crazy. Yeah, yeah, that's not going to work,
well,
is it?
My mum had a delivery of a Manuka honey. Mm. I know you want to rant a bit more, but I'm just going to interject.
I haven't remotely got through it yet.
She had a delivery of her Manuka honey, which she swears by to get her through all the winter. She's 93.
Does it make her phone work?
No, it doesn't, but it makes her lungs work. So, long story short, because I know you like a long story, but I like a short one. So
I've heard.
At least on radio. She texted me and she said, oh dear, I've got another job for you. She said, DP, whatever they're called, have not left it in the safe place. They've gone. And she said, I don't know how to get it, you know, get this delivery back. And so I said, okay, I'll come round. And I drove round and you have to scan it. You know, it's a stupid scan. It doesn't tell you go and collect it at Canterbury for a 93-year-old. She's got a phone, but she only WhatsApps on it and texts. She doesn't know how to scan. It's just very bad for elderly people or people that don't have a smartphone. It drives me mad that this, the way that they're just sidelining certain people with technology. Come on, get it off your chest.
Yeah, you know, the trouble is that technology is run by techies.
Yeah.
And they have no human skills whatsoever. That's a bit of a statement, but, you know, you've only got to look around at the things that companies, especially big corporations, do with their technology. And you think, did you not get your granny to try that before you actually launched that on the public?
And not because just granny, a lot of people are just simply not interested in tech. They don't want a smartphone.
How about this?
Oh, the finger's pointing now.
I get a text from my mum's GP.
Yeah.
We've rung them. She's got a problem on her leg and I'm not very happy about it. So I ring to try and make an appointment. You can't have an appointment, obviously.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do that.
I'm amazed you got through on the phone.
Oh, I didn't. I had to leave a message and then, anyway, I get a text, nothing else. I haven't spoken to anybody. I've just left a message saying I need an appointment for my mum. She's got a horrible looking wound on her leg and I need it looked at.
So it's an ulcer. Probably.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
anyway.
I
get a text message. This is the only communication I've had. A text message says, please send a photograph by text of the wound.
How rude.
Okay, hold on. I haven't finished yet. I take the photograph. I press reply. It goes, you can't reply to this text.
Ah, well, there you are. They don't know. Well, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing.
There you go.
Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, having a go at BT and Openreach about digital voice and the fact it doesn't work in a power cut, doesn't work when your broadband goes down, doesn't work when your router resets itself and everything else, and the fact you can't make emergency calls. And they said, well, yeah, but most people have got a mobile phone now. I said, well, two things here, yeah. At the moment, I'm with Vodafone. Mm. And Vodafone keeps sending me messages saying in the next 2 months they're switching off 3G.
Yeah.
I haven't got anything other than 3G.
No.
If they switch off 3G, I've got no mobile signal.
You'll be left with Semaphore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to be with Vodafone. I really dislike Vodafone for various reasons.
I dislike everybody.
But, yeah.
I just find it easier.
But where I live on seafront, other phone providers don't work, so I have to be with Vodafone, and I hate them. I hate them. But even worse, I now hate my GP surgery for selling me things now. In capital letters, I get texts now.
To be honest, I don't understand why BT and Openreach are doing what they're doing. I understand they want to move away from copper. I get that. But why bother with a landline? If what they're telling you is that you need a backup of a mobile phone, why do you need the landline in the first place? Just instead of spending all that money transferring everyone's phone, why don't they spend all that money upgrading the mobile phone network so it works everywhere?
Well, yeah.
Would seem to me to be a better idea. Although, a part of this, I have found now that BT do actually offer broadband without landline.
Yeah, but some people don't want a smartphone. Some people just
We don't have to have a smartphone to have a mobile phone.
No, but some people don't.
Some people
don't even want a phone, a mobile phone. A lot of people don't. Like, I've got an antiques dealer, Keith. He's lovely. Yeah. He's 72. I have to call him on his landline. He doesn't have a mobile. Doesn't want a mobile.
Yeah, no, but you can buy a Nokia mobile phone, a 3310, that looks just like a digital phone that you've got to have a landline. So it doesn't look any different, and it's not a smartphone. It's just a phone you can make phone calls on.
And can you walk around with it into town and stuff?
Yeah, because it's a mobile.
Okay, but it is like a landline phone, you're saying, or it's not?
No, I'm just saying.
So it is a mobile phone.
It's a mobile phone, but it's not a smartphone. You don't have to have a smartphone to have a mobile phone.
No, I know that, but some people just want a little trim phone, you know, like you had an, you know.
You can't use a trim phone. Get out of it. You're making it up now.
I used to have a lovely one on the wall.
Yeah, yeah. Next you'll be telling me about a candlestick phone where you take the thing and put it in your ear.
Do you know what I've bought?
What?
A friend of mine said that she's got from her utility provider. It'd be interesting to talk to Tony Cheeseman because he, you know, he's a consultant on property and all that. He'll know about it later on. He's up next, listener.
Yeah.
But we've got cheesy tunage first, of course. She texted me and said that her electricity and, you know, utilities provider have written to her and said, please be prepared for energy cuts, you know, blackouts.
Yeah.
Which we know they've been talking about for a couple of years since Russia and all that. So we know that they drip, drip, drip this sort of thing to get us ready and used to it. So I went and bought some wind-up torches.
Did you?
Yeah, and that's sweet. I got one for the new husband, one for me. And then I've also, last year, because I was aware that there might be, I bought a little generator, which is solar-powered.
Your solar generator, yeah.
Which was about 300 and something pounds. Mm. And it will do a laptop and a phone and stuff.
How
like
long
that.
Does it last?
I don't know. It's got a battery.
Do you have to leave it in the garden to charge it?
Yeah. Mm. But it's got a battery. You know, it will keep the charge, but I haven't really used it. But we have charged it.
Mm.
But I always think, knowing media, that they drip stuff through for a couple of years, and then it happens.
Mm.
You know, so
we're heading there any minute now. The government are going to appoint Ted Heath
and Winston.
Yeah, no, Ted Heath.
Margaret Thatcher.
No, hold on. No, they're going to appoint Ted Heath so he can manage the 3-day week, so we can be back to 1971.
Candles. It's bamboozling. Mm. I think I need a break and I need to have a mince pie. So, what are you playing?
Right, cheesy tunage.
Yeah, what's your cheesy tunage?
Well, you see if you can guess.
Is it from the 70s?
No.
Oh, I know this. This is Our House, Madness, or the other one. Yeah.
You're right.
Is it Suds, isn't it?
Madness.
Yeah. It's down my road, you know, Suds.
Is it?
Lights are pine.
Yeah.
Father, where's his Sunday best? Mother's tired, she's a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our house. It has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our street.
Something tells you that you've got to
move in the middle of our street. Father gets up late for work. Mother has to iron his shirt. She sends the kids to school, sees them off with a small kiss. She's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways. We'll be right back.
kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our house. Was our castle and our king. Our house, in the middle of our street.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with Workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk.
Does your business have great customer service? Are you a successful small or large business? Are you creative or innovative? Whatever your business strengths, you need to shout them out. So what's stopping you? Enter the Kent Business Awards now. Get your easy-to-complete application form from businessawardskent.co.uk.
Talis Independent Financial Advisors can help you invest, organise your pensions, and even get you the best possible life insurance, mortgage, or equity release deal. Check out talisifa.com.
Hey, there you go. Madness.
Great
Our
tune.
House. You named that tune in one?
I did, yeah. 10. Yeah, yeah. He lives in my road. Just to interject before we speak to Tony, that I forgot to say when we were ranting, because there were so many rants today, that I've just heard on Greatest Hits Radio, it's like the Brothers Grimm advert where they go, there's a monster in your house. And I'm listening. And it's telling people that wood burners are killing people and you can't use your wood burner. And as you know, we've got three boilers in our house and we haven't been able to use them because of the price of boilers. And so we are literally living with our wood burner and we burn good wood. Yeah. But they're going to get us in any way they can.
You're going to freeze to death. It's a government order. You're going to freeze to death whether you like it or not.
So they're building on farms, Tony. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute. And building all over farmland, and they're going to stop me being warm. It's like you can't do anything. I'm very cross. When I heard
and
it.
You're telling me that why?
Well, because I might have to come round yours.
Ring me up and tell me, except my phone don't work.
Oh, I know. Yeah. If only.
Anyway, enough of that. I want to talk to our first guest. Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show, Mr. Tony Cheeseman. And Tony is from IQ Property Services. Tony, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
It's a pleasure to see you. Why don't we kick off? Why don't you tell us a little bit about Tony to start with? Give us a bit of detail about you and your background, and then we'll talk about your company.
Okay, thanks, Paul. What was interesting, actually, earlier on here was you mentioned Ted Heath.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Friend of yours, was he?
well, we actually started our business back in 1973.
Right, okay.
And Ted Heath was Prime Minister. It was a three-day week and it was rationing of petrol.
Yeah.
It was a great time to start a business. Most people told me I was completely mad to embark on this venture. But there we are. We started it way back in 1973. So I think that must make it 50 years this year.
Congratulations.
The business has been running in one form or another. It wouldn't have been possible, of course, if I hadn't have actually been one of those lucky generation that where I could actually go through an apprenticeship that was run by one of our nationalised industries. So,
which industry was it?
So, it was my apprenticeship was run by the London Electricity Board.
Wow.
And I was training at the age of 16 as an electrical engineer and electrician apprenticeship. What was interesting about this was we don't do it anymore. We don't have these sort of schemes anymore. And if it hadn't have been for that scheme, I would never have started my business. The first year of that apprenticeship scheme, I was in a training centre. They decided that all these 16-year-old kids were not going to be anywhere like good enough to be let out onto a construction site. So they'd best keep them all corralled into a training centre, which was in a place called Pratt Street in Camden Town.
Right. Camden, wow.
And, do you know, we went through the first few months there making our own toolkit.
Right,
can you believe this?
Wow.
We was taught how to work a lathe and make our own tool kit. We made our own ladders, our own toolbox, our own tools. Absolutely amazing. Mm. It gave you such a grounding that at the end of this apprenticeship, I was confident enough at the age of just coming up to 21 to say, do you know what? I'll start my own business.
Wow, incredible.
Now this was completely, as everybody said, you're bonkers. Right. What are you doing? Not only are you starting your own business, we've got a 3-day week and you can't even put any petrol in the van that you've bought yourself. But anyway, so it was, and we did start our own business, and within the space of maybe 5 years, we was quite successful. We was running a nice little electrical contracting business, and people were asking us to do bigger and bigger jobs. We'd managed to work with lots of housing associations, and then we luckily was introduced to somebody at Barclays Bank, and we could become one of their most preferred contractors, doing rolling refurbishments around their banking halls.
Sorry to interrupt, I thought you were going to tell me they lent you money, and I was going,
no, I don't believe that. No, they certainly didn't lend us money. But it was a catalyst that drove the company forward, because from that point in time, we bought out another company, we combined the business, it became a mechanical and electrical contracting business, and it was very successful, and we developed it into a multi-million pound turnover business, and we was employing upwards of 40 staff at any one time, sometimes with subcontractors and the itinerant workforce that runs around the construction industry. We may have had 80 odd people working on various sites. It was stressful, it was demanding, and as I got into my sort of 30s, I was looking around and thinking, is there something else I can do in this industry that is perhaps less demanding on me? And I took myself back to, I'd never been there in the first place, but I went to university to do an MBA.
That's an interesting move.
They said you've got to have a first degree to come on this course.
Right.
So I went along for an interview and said, I haven't got a first degree, but I've done this apprenticeship, and by now I've been running businesses for 20 odd years. And they said, okay, no, that's good enough. You can come on to the scheme. So I sat my MBA and passed my MBA.
Well done.
Which was in SMEs, so small to medium enterprises.
Wow.
Which becomes a great passion of mine, really. But what had occurred to me while I was running through the MBA was I was looking at what else can I do within the industry? Where are their niche markets? And who do I feel is not particularly well looked after in the industry? And from all of my experiences on construction sites, I came to the conclusion that actually, the end customer is not that well looked after in our industry. They need to be better looked after.
Yeah.
They need to be the focus of everything we do. And as you spoke about earlier on, you spoke about tech. And tech, Paul, I think you said you just can't get on with these tech people. You can't understand the language they use.
Exactly,
That is quite similar in the construction
industry. Yeah.
I call it the black art. People won't tell you what you don't know. So they just let you carry on along the road, laying little traps for you sometimes. This isn't true of everybody, but if you don't know what you don't know,
you don't know what to ask.
You don't know what to do. So we're the people you can come to in the construction industry who will tell you what you don't know.
Right.
Not only that, we will hold your hand through the whole process.
Yeah.
So we've now been running our construction consultancy business for the last 25 years, primarily working with clients who are building their own houses or refurbishing their own houses and providing them with support all the way through that journey. Now, it can be, we have three types of schemes on our within the company. We have a silver scheme where you can just come to us for advice, and it's just charged on an hourly rate. We have a gold scheme or a platinum scheme. And if it's the platinum scheme, we will hold your hand from the beginning of your imagination, from the time you believe you want to build something or refurbish something, all the way through to the end, when you pick up the key and walk into your new house.
So does that include architects, or do you work with architects?
We will appoint all of the construction team.
Great.
So if the client works with us early enough, we will advise them on what architects to use, what structural engineers to use. I wrote a list out the other day. There's about 17 individual professionals that you need when you're building a house.
Right.
Because we've made it ever more complicated. You know, you now need archaeologists.
What's an archaeologist?
You'll need people. We're doing a project in Sevenoaks at the moment.
Tony, what's an archaeologist?
We have to have an archaeological watching brief.
Ah.
Okay. This project's near Knoll Park. So they're saying, oh, there may be some history here. So every time we dig a hole, the archaeologist
has to look in it.
Have a look into the hole. There's any number of people that are involved in this construction process. And if you don't get good advice, you can fall foul of these mistakes. You can fall down some of these pits. And listen, you're trying to protect what is most probably your biggest asset. So it's good advice that you need to try and protect that asset, in our view. And it's a service that's proven to be very successful. It's meant we've moved away a little from our field of construction. We still run a maintenance company. So if we project manage a build for somebody, then once the build is finished, we maintain the house for them afterwards. But it's a whole carefully thought out process that protects the end user, and they are the people who should be protected because they feed our industry.
And what areas? All through the UK?
No, we only work in Kent and southeast of the country.
Right, fair enough.
We will go up into London, but generally it tends to be Kent, Sevenoaks, Chislehurst, Bromley, those areas, which is where our business is based, effectively.
Okay, you're absolutely right. Like so many industries, it has its own dark arts, it has its own terminology, it has its own ins and outs. And as you kind of intimated, the construction industry has become more and more complicated over the years.
Yes, it certainly has.
Yeah, you know, planning regulations, some of them are completely bonkers. A lot of them conflict with each other as well.
We recently had a client who came to us because they'd fallen foul of something called the SIL.
Right.
So SIL stands for Community Infrastructure Levy. Now, if you're building your own house for you to occupy, you can apply for an exemption from the SIL charge. A SIL charge is applied to every new build house that goes up.
Right.
You can apply for an exemption to that SIL charge, providing it's for you to live in the house.
Right.
But the process is prescriptive. If you miss one of these steps along the right way, you will get the SIL charge applied to you. This particular client, building a house for their own occupation, got an invoice sent to them by the local authority for £30,000 because they had not followed the SIL process properly.
Right.
And then it's incredibly difficult to get them out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that they really don't know.
Yeah.
You know, at the outset, we could explain that. If we'd been appointed to help them at the outset, this wouldn't have happened.
This is absolutely true, isn't it? I have a business where we're building four new build offices. And the amount of stuff that you get every day that says, oh, you know, you can't do that, you can't do this, have you got one of these, have you got a certificate for that, have you got this, have you got that? You think, who thinks up all this stuff? So you're absolutely right. So many areas of life now need expertise. And one of the problems for the layperson is knowing who to go to.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You know, because you, as you intimated up front, you don't know what you don't know, but then you don't know who to ask who does know what you don't know.
That's absolutely right. Of course,
yeah. You know, and that's where these problems can occur, because you sit there going, I need to ask someone, but who do I ask? Yeah, I have an answer. I always ask him. I always ask Mark. He knows someone normally, but it's true, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's not just with the construction industry. It's the same with technology. You know, a lot of people go, oh, you know, we need to understand GDPR, or we need to understand this, or we need to understand that. But I don't know who to ask, because I don't know if they know.
this is so true.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, this is all about building the right team at the outset of a project.
Yeah.
It's about sitting down with a client, getting the client to provide a wish list to us of what they are envisaging the house to look like, and then finding for them the right architects, the right structural engineers, the right people to work with them. The team that you build is so important.
Yeah.
When I was going back to when I was doing my master's, we'd done some work on what was then called the Latham Report and the Egan Report, and this was about building teams in construction. Because if you build the right team and you hold them together throughout the project, you'll get a good result at the end of it.
Yeah.
And the process is quite simple, you know. I mean, how many clients go into a project where they've appointed a builder and they've not even got a contract? They've no signed contract. They've no paperwork to protect them.
And
there's simple processes they can take to protect their position along the way.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, many years ago, long time ago, I had a house. I bought a house. It was a Victorian country house. It was miles from anywhere. It just stood in a field on its own. And bizarrely, it had a septic tank, but a septic tank was next door. It was in a farmer's field, and the pipe work to it was all above ground. Yeah. And us, you know, we've got to do something about that.
Quite common.
So we put in a water treatment plant. Yeah. But luckily I had a surveyor that was managing the project for me, because the building inspector turned up one day and he went, "You can't put that in." I went, "Why?" He said, "Because it doesn't conform to EU regulations on pipe diameter." And my surveyor said, "Listen, son," he said, "come and look at this house. Do you spot anything about this house?" And he went, "Yeah, it's old." He went, "Yes, exactly. Yeah. So the pipes that come out of that house do not fit a Euro standard pipe. So it ain't going to happen." And he went, "But that's the regulation." And he went, no, it's not. And we had this massive row because he wanted us to put in plastic pipe that just wouldn't work. You know, and that was 25-30 years ago, so God knows what it's like now. It must be really appalling.
Well, the regulations become more onerous each day, really. You've really got to understand those regulations and work with them constantly.
Absolutely. I'm going to say, for an organisation like you as well, it must be pretty time consuming to keep up with all the new stuff as well.
Yes. Just the health and safety aspects
The health and safety is really quite interesting, because what clients don't understand is they become the employer on a project. So fundamentally, they are responsible for health and safety. They have to comply with the 2016 CDM regulations, and it's their responsibility to make sure that they are complied with fully. Now, they can appoint a professional person to do that on their behalf, and we use specialised health and safety consultants to act on the client's behalf. And it's how important is it to make sure that health and safety is good on construction sites? It's the one thing, actually, over the years, because of what I spoke about earlier, the Latham reports and Egan reports have made health and safety much better on our construction sites. Interestingly, We no longer kill so many people on our big construction sites. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? But people used to die.
Young builders making loads of dust when they're angle grinding, and they're not wearing a mask.
They're not wearing eye protection.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, the number of times I will walk around a building site and stop someone and say, "Please go and put some eye protection on. You've only got one set of eyes.
Exactly.
Okay? We don't want you to lose them."
How involved do you get with solar and stuff?
So solar and heat pumps, so air source heat pumps, ground source heat pumps. Of course, it's a new technology. It's coming into play. We're doing a project at the moment where we're trying to evaluate the difference between ground source heat pumps and air source heat pumps. What will be the best for that project from a cost point of view, from a value engineering point of view. But generally, the technology is good. The houses are now very well insulated. They're built to a much higher standard. So that technology on new houses can work very, very well. It's more of a challenge when you try and put it into an old house.
Like a Victorian house. I've
much, much more of a challenge. But good for new build properties.
Yeah.
Do you get into the Huff houses, you know, these passive houses?
Well, passive house, we've done some passive house so they get certified as passive house. Mm. But, you know, the reality of it is now most of the houses you can build them to be incredibly energy efficient.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, this particular property goes back most probably 15 years ago when it was built in Sevenoaks, and it was so well constructed, so well insulated. It had a gas boiler, but it also had what they call a whole house ventilation system. So you're capturing the warm air from various areas of the house, recirculating it, and put it into other areas of the property.
Does that mean you don't open windows, or you shouldn't open?
You would still open windows. You could, but this effectively is ventilating your property and keeping a good atmosphere inside your property all the time. You don't need to have trickle vents in your windows or whatever. And the house was so energy efficient that by the time the property was finished, the gas board come three times to see our client because they couldn't believe that the gas bills had gone down so much.
Wow.
They was convinced that there was something wrong.
Fiddling.
Yeah, dodgy. Yeah, they bypassed the meter.
Yeah. So, I mean, the new technology works very, very well. You've got to make sure you get the right people to put it in.
Yeah. That's all. And as you pointed out, that's with a new build. Old housing stock isn't quite as easy, is it?
Old housing stock is not as easy.
And yeah, I love an old house. I've always had Victorian houses. Mm. I love them. I've now got a more modern house. I think it's 50 years old or something. And I find it much, much harder to refurb than a Victorian.
Yeah, I've got a Victorian house. And the problem is it becomes quite difficult to do anything. Yeah, because most modern stuff isn't built to put in a Victorian house, and I've funnily enough, I've got a gas boiler and a heat pump, and my house is still bloody freezing cold.
We recently refurbished a Grade 2 star listed Georgian property.
Did you? Yeah.
Delicious.
And again, you know, it had some good technology put into there. But it was a case of completely stripping it out in order to put it back together again.
But did you still keep original features?
We had to. We had to go via Historic England.
Lovely.
So, you know, this was listed. And we had historic planning going on all the time.
We put our windows are very old, double glazed, like 50, 60 years old. And we put new windows in. And I absolutely hate them because they're, what are they, PVC or something?
I hate them.
New PVC. And I said to my new husband, why didn't we have proper wooden ones made? I look at them and I hate them.
You can have very nice wooden windows made that are very efficient.
Now I know that.
I
regret doing it. Yeah. So when these go, because they will, because they're plastic, I will ask my accountant if I can afford to have wooden ones made. Bespoke.
He'll go, no.
Bespoke wooden ones.
You can only afford plastic, Jules. Off you go.
Bespoke.
Yeah. Cool. Tony, thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure hearing from you and to hearing such common sense about it. We're going to talk to Mark later, and one of the things we might mention about the construction industry, which tickles me no end, is this reverse VAT nonsense that everybody has to deal with. I mean, talk about picking an industry that's the worst one to implement something so complicated. I do not know what, you know, it can only have been deliberate, really, couldn't it?
It goes back to your point earlier, Paul, this idea of technicians coming up with bright ideas for the general public.
This is a bricklayer. You're going to try and, you know, they can't even work out the VAT in the first place, which is why they do all the jobs cash. Yeah, and now you want reverse VAT. Right, okay. Tony, thank you so much for that. Tony is from IQ Property Services. Tony, if people want to find out about the services you offer, do you have a website or anything that they can look at?
Yep, it's just www.iqpropertyservices.com.
Brilliant.
Or then it's call the office,
which is 01 959 533 788.
The website link and all the other contact details are on the Kempis' Radio website, so you can find them there if you want to speak to Tony's people about a project that you might be planning.
There's also an email, which is admin@propertyservices.com.
Cool, fantastic. IQ Property Services.
Yeah.
Nice one. Tony, thank you so much for that. We're going to join the newsroom in 10 minutes or so. We could actually start the show now and read out some of our tweets or stuff.
Yeah, well, Tracy Ferguson is listening in. She says, really enjoying the conversation with Tony. Very insightful and interesting. I hadn't heard of a passive house before. Oh, I've had one built near me, Tracy. You can call it passive house. I love old houses, I agree. My little two up, two down was built in 1886, freezing cold in winter and beautifully cool in the summer. That's great. And Tracy, let's just tell you what she is. She is the owner of Plucky's World. You can follow her on the Twitter or X at Tazi64, T-A-Z-I-64. She's a personal growth trainer and mentor. And her website is pluckiesworld.com. And she's already, of course, doing her amazing mixed media creative workshop, which is at the Island Works on the Isle of Sheppey, on the sunny Isle of Sheppey, Saturday the 25th of November. So that's looming up. She has just a couple of spaces left, and she's going to be sharing with you creativity and fun on the day. You can email her, her website for that is Tracy, T-R-A-C-I, at Tazi Creates, T-A-Z-I, creates.com.
That's an email address.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. It's an email address then.
See what I mean about technology?
Yeah, I didn't know she'd started a special website for that. Yeah, but it's an email address. There you are, it's an email address. You don't have to splutter.
But a format is an email address because it's got an at in it. You don't have an at in a web address.
Ever?
Never.
I'm sure I've seen an at.
Not in a web address. You're not allowed.
I've seen some very odd things.
You can't have an at in a web address.
Well,
in a URL.
Thank you very much for pointing that out, Paul Andrews.
That's all right.
It's very kind of you.
Yeah, I'm good like that. Yeah. Chips and Dinks have tweeted.
I'll strangle you later.
Yeah, a wonderful lineup today on the Business Bunker Show. I'm wishing you all another great business show. So thank you for that. That's Bev and Tony from Chips and Dinks. Martin Reeves. Collector's buddy, I'd love a Business Bunker shout out, please. I'm listening live this afternoon and looking forward to hearing from all the guests. And he's got a gif of Kermit going bonkers.
We have a council that's unveiled plans to bring back a town's once loved fish market, which was destroyed in a fire more than a year ago. This is quite interesting because I walked past this over weekend. Canterbury City Council this week revealed it is looking to secure the return of stalls and commercial units in Whitstable Harbour as part of its 10-year vision. The fish market and Crab and Winkle restaurant was destroyed in a blaze last May after flames spread into the building from a neighbouring cockle shed. It sounds very Whitstabilian, doesn't it? Your neighbouring cockle shed. As part of its latest plans, the authority hopes to develop the cockle shed site into new commercial units for residents and tourists. It's a bit of a shame, actually, to lose that, because if any of you visited Whitstable Harbour, as it was really, really lovely. And a lot of these units are sort of not very Whitstable now.
Right.
Sort of things like sushi and, you know, it's not maybe very Whitstabilian, but I'm glad that that is being refurbished.
Cool. I'm trying to count. We all of a sudden we've got a mad rush of loads of tweets. Tenterton Chamber of Commerce, preparations are well underway to install the small Christmas trees in the High Street, which is always a fantastic thing this time of year in Tenterton High Street. And the Chamber has actually donated £500 towards the Tenterton Wrap project. And you're going to be hearing about the Tenterton Wrap project on the show next week. So I'll say no more because it's all happening next week on the show, Tenterton Wrap.
Eurostar's monopoly over high-speed continental passenger train services through the Channel Tunnel could be set to be broken by Sir Richard Branson. According to reports, the billionaire Virgin boss is drafting up plans to go ahead head-to-head with Eurostar, a company which has enraged many in Kent by failing to stop any of its continental services at either Ashford or Ebbsfleet since the pandemic. Because you know we were promised that, but it hasn't come back. Mm. However, with Virgin bosses keeping tight-lipped over the claims reported in the Telegraph, it is not known if the proposals would include reviving the fortunes of Kent's two international stations. And the news comes hot on the heels of Spanish company Evelyn formally declaring an interest in a Eurostar challenger. Bring it on, I say.
It's bonkers that they spent all that money on infrastructure for Ebbsfleet and Ashford international stations and then stopped running trains through them.
Exactly.
It's just nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. and Michael Park Surveyors. We would love a shout out on the Business Bunker, please, Paul. Thank you, Paul and Jules, for that. That's Michael Park Surveyors. They're commercial property surveyors based in Medway, covering the southeast of England. MPSL is their Twitter handle, not to be confused with the Metropolitan Police Service.
Don't tweet them and say.
Sarah Marsh Collins, good afternoon, Business Bunker peeps. She says, have a fabulous time listening in, trying to anyway, over the sound of rain on the conservatory roof. I know the feeling. I got rained on big time earlier. Martin Reeves has come back and said, I tuned in a bit late to the Business Bunker as I had to pick my car up. Quite a bit. It was heavy, Martin.
Just with one finger.
Yeah.
Did you see his other one about his friend's property developers?
No, I haven't got there yet.
So he says, Vanilla Web Jewel Sirkin, very interesting B Bunker, using the hashtag. First interview with Tony. Some of my friends are property developers and they're never off their phones all day and sorting too many things out. Sure, that sounds familiar, Tony.
It certainly does.
P.S. If I win the lottery, I'll get IQ Business Services to build my dream house from scratch. It's finding the land. It's finding the land, isn't it?
Finding the plots is very, very difficult.
Because some people seem to be able to snap them up. I'd love a plot. I'd love a plot, Paul Andrews.
They just built three houses opposite me, which they've just completed the houses. They're on the market for 1.5 to 1.6 million each. I've looked at it, I'm like, really? Really?
My son has just bought a flat with his girlfriend in Deptford, which is quite interesting because it's quite up and coming, as you may have noticed in your line of
Deptford's
business.
It's close to my heart. It was an area where I grew up in Lewisham, so just up the road from there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they pretend it's Greenwich, of course, but they're on the cusp.
Yes.
they've bought a new development and it's lovely. It's taken a year, as Paul knows, but a lot of money. And I'm amazed at the size of the kitchens. They're very, very small. It's not a very new development. It's got a roof terrace, which is why they went for it, a bit of outside space. Sixth floor. It's on the Gates. What's it called? Gates. I'll send you where it is. But I'm amazed at the size of the kitchen because they're both cooks. You know, they cook a lot and there's hardly any workspace. And storage is, you know.
Sadly, we build some of the smallest units in Europe.
Yeah, I can imagine. And even the hallway, you know, where's your storage? Where do you put your coats, your boots?
It's like these houses I just told you about. If you look at the agent's details, it says 1 acre plot, yeah? And it intimates that it's got a 1 acre garden, but it hasn't because the house takes up most of the acre and the garden is tiny.
Yeah, the gardens are tiny.
It's absolutely tiny. Anyway.
And as we'll all soon have to be growing our own vegetables and things.
They'll sell them quite easily to someone down from London, won't they?
DFL.
That was sold a dog kennel for $5 million and moved out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mark, you've got a big garden, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got 5 acres of land.
Yeah. Have you? But can't you just sell me an acre? Mm.
No.
Okay. There you go. You said it like a true accountant, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I've got 2.5 acres and...
Sell me an acre. Oh, you'll just give me the boggy bit with the lake, though, won't you?
Yeah, exactly. You can have the marshy bit.
Thank you, Bill.
Sarah Marsh Collins has been on. I said earlier about this nonsense with my mum's GP and taking a photograph. She said, I had to take photos of my dad's cellulitis to text to the doctor, but you can't qualify the bacteria from a photo. You need a swab. So it's completely pointless. Dad's had antibiotics changed 3 times to get the right one to kill the bug.
I hope he's gone on probiotics now. He's had one of those. Did you read Sarah's one about Tony? So she said, forgive me if you have, great interview with Tony.
No, I haven't read it.
He's so practical, but gosh, isn't it mind-boggling how much there is to consider when building, Tony? You're the H&S officer for your own build. Wowzers.
Tracy Ferguson has said, woohoo, I got the cheesy tunage immediately. Madness.
Yeah, it was a good one.
See what she did there.
Yeah, I'm just answering Sarah as well.
Hold on. Now, has Tracy's responded? Oh. Darren, our PR man here, was having a go at me for ranting about phones, and Tracy's going, Mike and I said this to Paul on Saturday. Tracy and her partner Mike came along to our craft fair at Island Works on Saturday, and we were chatting about such things.
What did you eat?
Huh?
What did you eat?
What did I eat?
Yeah, nothing.
I had cheese and onion toasty, obviously.
What, with a Mars bar in it?
No, I didn't have to Mars bar. We don't do a Mars bar. We do Snickers and Nutella toasty, or a banana and honey and cinnamon toasty. But I had a cheese and onion toasty.
Cinnamon is lovely in winter as well, isn't it?
Mm.
So we've had quite a few. There's a coffee morning at Kenwood. It's just been sent this in. It's a monthly Kenwood coffee morning. The last Thursday of every month, cakes and savouries are available. And the next one is Thursday, the 30th of November. It's at 10:30 to 3 p.m. There's no need to turn up to book. You can just turn up.
No need to turn up. They'll send you the coffee.
No need to book. Just turn up. I need coffee. It's because my dog woke me up at 4:30 this morning. Sarah, if you're listening, I need advice. Kenwood Trust is in Yalding, and it's Ken Ward, K-E-N Ward, W-A-R-D. And the sat-nav is M for Mother, E for Egbert, 18, 6, A for Anonymous, and H for Harry.
Yeah. Cool. So I'm still trying to catch up with the tweets.
There's a lot.
Martin Reeves said, oh no, you've already done that one.
Tunbridge has a networking event. We hope you can join us. They say on the November the 3rd Thursday in the Tunbridge networking event. The meeting is sponsored by Alistair McCluskey Wealth Management. Do you know him? Yeah, I'm sure you'll get...
No, I don't.
I'm sure you'd get together. Alistair McCluskey Wealth Management, and hosted by at the Oaks Specialist College. And they'll be raising money, they say, for the school with a business card draw. And the Oaks Specialist College is in Cage Green Road, Tunbridge, and that's Kent. T for Tony, our guest. N for Nigel. 10, 4, P for Peter, and T for Tango. It's on the 16th of November, 10:30 to midday.
Fantastic. The Kent Social Enterprise Club have a launch event. It's a new club, the Kent Social Enterprise Club. Please join us for an unforgettable event. We're planning something you won't want to miss, and we hope to see you there. It's taking place on the 30th of November from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. You can find all the details by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/Canada, and you'll find it there. So that's the Kent Social Enterprise Club.
And how long have we got? No, we haven't got long enough to read that. So traders have welcomed the news that an experienced operator is being appointed to help a historic venue thrive. Gravesham Council has decided it will be bringing in an external management company to run Gravesend Borough Market and help transform it into a food and drink-led destination. Local authority owns the building and is currently responsible for running it, at a cost of more than $156,000 a year. It's launched a strategy for the space adjacent to the High Street in 2020 to create a hub for the community and tourists to meet, shop, eat and drink while keeping its historic roots. Well done, Gravesham Council.
On Friday the 24th of November, there's the lighting of the town Christmas tree and decorations in Tenterton.
Lovely.
It's taking place in the plaza outside the town hall from 5 p.m. They say the High Street will be closed from 5:15 until 5:35 for health and safety reasons. And there's special guest appearances from the cast of the Cinderella pantomime.
Oh, no, there isn't.
Oh, yes, there is.
Behind you.
It's not. If you want to find out more about it, tentertontowncouncil.gov.uk/events. tentertontowncouncil.gov.uk/events. But as I said, the Tenterton Big Wrap is on the show next week, and you'll find out more about all the Christmas-based frolicking that's going to go on.
Mm, we haven't heard from Terry Thorpe lately.
Terry just sent that.
Yeah, but we haven't really heard from him about greyhounds today.
I don't want to hear from him about greyhounds. I don't like greyhounds.
You don't really like...
I eat your belt.
Yeah, I know.
And your shoes.
Yeah, I know.
And sit on your bed and sit on your sofa, yeah, when they're not supposed
in
to.
In fact, my son, Shay, in his Deptford Greenwich stroke thing, had an airbed, and the greyhound got very comfy on their airbed, and they have rather big claws.
Airbed? Is that like an Airbnb?
No, it's just a temporary bed.
Right. Do you know what?
Let's listen to the news.
We're gonna join the newsroom in a moment. Let me just remove that. We're gonna join the newsroom in a moment, and then we come back. We've got another fantastic guest to talk to. We're gonna talk to Mr. Mark.